This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu, and you're listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. Today, I'm speaking to Roy Shepherd again, all about his latest book, How to Be a Cool Guy. Good to have you back here in Malaysia, Roy. And very interesting book titles you've always had. Now, so you've written other books, some of which we've interviewed you about previously, but those were released in print. So for this one, it's an e-book. Why is it an e-book?
Well, the world has gone digital. Mm. And the interesting thing, when you publish an e-book, literally within 3 hours, it's available on online stores all over the world within moments. Right. I mean, it's a remarkable thing. Anybody who's written a book will realize the beauty of being able to hold the first printed copy. Mm. But when you see that it's available in Japan and Australia and India and America and Germany and Russia instantly, and nobody's got to ship anything anywhere,
right,
and you can literally click a button and you can open it within a few seconds and read it. I mean, I think that's amazing.
Right. Don't so you've moved through the times. Well, do you think you'll be coming up with a printed version, though?
I don't know whether How to Be a Cool Guy is something that you'd want to read on the metro or on a bus. It has to pass that test.
Okay. So some of your other books include Advice for Women as well. I remember that one. And why did you decide to distinguish your advice by gender?
Well, I did a book for young guys because I used to be a young guy a very, very long time ago. And then my editor was going to do the equivalent for the young girl. Mm. And in the end, she couldn't do it. So I did it, but she edited it. And I speak at schools in the UK and I get introduced as, this is Roy Shepherd. He's 57. I'm not 57 anymore. And he's now going to show you how to be a woman. And talking to groups of 17-year-olds. And it's just brilliant. It's fantastic. And when I did one school, and there were about 50 17-year-olds, mm-hmm. and about a third to half of them stayed behind afterwards to carry on the conversation. It was really, really engaging. And the teacher, she was really keen to get me to do it because she said, in the girls' school, they only ever spend time with women.
Right.
So to have a male perspective was quite unique. And she said that it was great because it was different. Okay. And, they were asking questions about dating and stuff like that. So, well, I've never dated a guy, but, you know.
So, like with this book, right, can the advice in this book apply to both genders, though?
Well, definitely. Yeah. And I only found that out when I was writing it. And, in fact, I've had quite a lot of women wanted to read it because they want to get inside the mind of a man. It's usually an echo in there. But, but they read it and they went, a lot of what's in here is equally relevant to men and to women. And a lot of it is about how to actually manage stress, how to be more resilient, how to remain energized when everybody these days seems to be exhausted with everything. But I was really fascinated with the idea of coolness because having worked in radio and TV for the BBC in England for as long as I did, I was surrounded by genuinely cool people, really cool people. And I've often wondered where I went wrong. And no, seriously, I thought I've never been part of that group of being the really cool guy, but I was with a lot of them. And then I thought, actually, as I'm approaching 60 now, I thought, I wonder what it is. So I started to do some research into it. And it is a very male-specific thing. So if you ever think about cool, you have a view. So as a woman, you know, I could say to you, so how would you define cool? And and you'd probably go by a look. Maybe it's the James Dean look. Mm. That's cool, you know, that sort of stuff. But the more you think about it and the more you think about genuine, authentic cool, it's not shallow. It's actually quite deep. Mm. And the behaviors, attitudes really intrigued me. And I interviewed a whole load of men and women about it. And I think I now know where I went wrong.
Okay.
But it was interesting. Really, really interesting.
And it's never too late.
I believe so.
Right. And you talk a lot about confidence, right? And I guess you're equating coolness with confidence. And
the right type of confidence
right?
Though,
and you've got the different types of confidence in the book. What are the different types of confidence?
Well, there's an inner confidence and an outer confidence. There's a lot of people do the superficial, they try to look cool. And if you're trying to look cool, by definition, you're not cool.
Mm.
And I think
you
it's
could exude it.
Yeah, but you exude it from inside, right, rather than wearing all the designer clothes and trying to be arrogant or being arrogant. If you think about the cool people you know, whether they're male or female, they normally have a much quieter sense of who they are. That quiet self-confidence comes from inside. And I talk about it's like a lamp. Mm. You know, there's a confidence lamp,
yeah,
which – if they've got the wrong sort of confidence, that lamp burns really, really brightly on them. You want the world to look at yourself. But genuine coolness, I think, is where you have an inner lamp and it shines on everybody else. And people want to know cool people because they are people who attract people, whereas I think people who think they're cool actually turn people away, if you think about
right.
it.
Right. I like that visual image, though, that lamp, right? Mm. Shining with it to yourself or shining outside. You also have a cool quotient. How do I...
The CQ, yes.
The CQ.
Well, there's an IQ and there's an EQ, and I thought, well, let's have a CQ. And what I wanted to do there really was to get people to think about all of the qualities that represent genuine coolness. And when you add all of those together, they will add up to your CQ. And they're mainly about other people. It's how you interact with other people. And a lot of people who pretend to be cool or think they're cool are trying to get other people to like them more, when in fact, actually, genuinely cool people are usually very, very good at getting other people to feel better about themselves. And I think that's the opposite of what people normally do when they get it wrong. Because, you know, going back to writing for young people, you know, very often when you're young, you pretend to be who you think a man should be or a woman should be. And if you get it right, you know, yes, you're sort of cool. Mm. If you get it wrong, you're a jerk, whether you're male or female. Mm. So really it is about understanding the different component parts of what makes you who you are. And it's all about perception. It's about understanding yourself and then understanding the effect that you have on other people. And that lends to your charisma and ultimately your confidence and how good you are really at attracting people and opportunities into your life, which goes to what success is all about.
Mm. I remember reading for Dale Carnegie from years way back, and that's still, you know, stuck with me. Be interested, not interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely correct.
So yes. These are gems that have stood the test of time. Now, what is the link, though, between energy and coolness?
Well, the example I use in the book is that, you know, imagine James Bond wakes up, you know, one morning, he's had a bit of a hard night, and he thinks, oh, he said, I can't be bothered to save the world today. I'll just turn over and go back to sleep because he was too tired. I mean, that's never going to happen, is it? Mm. You know, I mean, James Bond has always got energy and you always have energy in reserve. And I think that cool people have always got more that you don't see.
Mm.
And that comes from energy. And I think we live in a world now where it's normal to be exhausted. In fact, people brag about how exhausted they are. And you can manage it. And there are all sorts of things that will increase your energy and all sorts of things that decrease it. And in the book, I say we're rechargeable batteries.
Okay.
You know, we either go on rapid charge all the time, which a lot of people do. You know, it's the alcohol, caffeine, sugar, and, you know, and that's the daily fix. That's how they do a rapid charge every day. And what people don't realize is that that wears off and you literally hit a cliff. You fall off a cliff. So you think, right, I'll get another caffeine hit
another hit.
Yeah, of whatever it is. Mm. So, you know, it is understanding what your energy cycle is.
Right.
I mean, I know, having done TV for years at breakfast time, that I'm best in the morning. And, you know, I'll get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. People think, you're crazy. I said, well, yeah, I know that. But but that's when I'm at my peak. That's when I'm at my most productive. You know, 10 o'clock at night, forget it. You know, so I'm going to exercise and do my strength training and stuff when I have the most energy. Because, you know, as someone who, you know, works out yourself, you know that exercise gives you energy. Mm. It doesn't take it away. Whereas people who don't do it think, oh, I'm too tired to do that. And they're missing the whole point.
Right. You know, no, but that's the thing as well. And I realized that morning is my thing. And I exercise in the morning. So then by the time I finish, I've forgotten. I've just exercised. That's great.
But you've also achieved something early in the day. Yeah. And that is energizing in itself. But what I've got in the book is a whole range of different things that affect our energy. And when you are a low energy person, there are all sorts of things. I mean, you don't have the same physical strength. You don't have the same sort of stick-it-to-itness.
Okay.
And you're far more likely to have negative emotions. And it's a whole spiral of stuff. So low energy can actually ultimately lead to depression. So when you know how to manage your energy level by understanding the cycles for yourself on a daily basis, you can then do something about it. And the more you do that, the more energetic you become.
It's endorphins and the chemicals, right? And it's, if you understand the science behind it, all the more you just need to do it because, you know, that just gives you a natural high.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't gone into the science of it within the book. But it's funny. Common sense isn't that common. But, you know, I found – I don't know if you'll find this, whether you agree with this or not, but I know a lot of people. And all of the most energetic people I know drink loads of water. Water is probably the best thing that you can consume to give you energy. And there are people say, oh, you know, I tried drinking water once, but it has an unfortunate side effect. So, well, if you're dehydrated, it will have that side effect, but only for a few days.
Right.
But everybody I know who's got loads of energy actually drinks a lot of water.
That was the health tip for the day.
It is.
Okay. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about the book, How to Be a Cool Guy. Roy Shepherd here with me. Stay tuned to Race Again, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Yes, you're listening to Raise Your Game. I'm Frida Liu. I've got Roy Shepherd here with me with his latest book, How to Be a Cool Guy. Of course, Roy has spoken to us a couple of years ago and he's back from the UK. You know, of course, you know, you've had your past life with on radio and TV.
Long time ago with the BBC.
Right? So anyway, we're talking about your book, How to Be a Cool Guy. Now, one of the things that you also talk about in the book is the concept of kryptonite.
Well, Superman was, you know, weakened by kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
And I just listed all of the different things that can drag us down. Mm. You know, is the food we eat, the drink we drink, the people we spend time with. I mean, there are so many people who are so negative, and they will drag us down. And I think if you add together all of the component parts, then you think, well, let me be aware of all of those and then do something about eliminating each of those. Sometimes, you know, you may be married or you're with somebody or working with somebody who is very negative. And you can't really do much about that long term. But you can limit the amount of time. But it comes back to the same thing over and over again, which is be more aware of what is going on around you.
Right.
And sometimes when there are things that are making you feel bad, when you add them all together, that's why you feel so exhausted and demoralized or whatever. When you understand what they are, you can then do something about it. I don't say this in the book, but I do a talk at conferences called How to Be Upbeat in a Downbeat World. And I talk about two different types of thinking. One is thermal thinking, which is like a bird soaring in the thermals, which lift you up. And then there's plug hole thinking. And that's the vortex of you start having negative thoughts and it drags you down and down and down and down. But the secret is recognizing when those things are happening. And if you start to go into a vortex, go, whoa, 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 I'm not going to let this happen anymore. And it's amazing. You have a huge amount of control over it if you practice it, if you become aware. And in the How to Be a Cool Guy book, I wanted to be able to say in very simple terms, look, these are the things to be aware of. Add all of those together, do something about them, and you will become a better person for yourself. And it will change the perception people have of you.
Right.
And I have to say, some people said to me after I'd written the book, actually, Roy, you are quite a cool person. Well, maybe the research worked then.
Because, you know, what you said as well, like, are we aware of what's occupying my headspace? And it's just something like, okay, what's taking up my mind? And that is the start of, you know,
well, we're too busy, you know, we don't step back.
And
one of the things I talk about is when you learn to step back, recognize the bigger picture, understand the effect that it's having on you, then you can do something about it. You know, I meet a lot of people at conferences, and it amazes me, actually, how few people are self-aware anymore because they don't have the time. There's too many things to do. But this is the ultimate DIY job.
It's the gadgets. And how does resilience tie into being cool?
Well, cool people always remain cool under pressure.
Mm. Cool so, as a cucumber.
Cool as a cucumber, exactly. Mm. And I think these days we're all under pressure. So it's not about how you handle yourself when things are going well. It's how do you actually handle yourself when everybody else is panicking?
Mm.
And the qualities of being able to cope with things when they're going badly, that's a real life skill. And I believe that it helps you manage your stress levels. You know, you can't be, you know, a stressed out person and be cool at the same time. It just doesn't work.
Mm.
So I started to research into the qualities that resilient people have. And resilient people have exactly the same pressures, problems, and disasters that befall everybody else. But they manage them in a much, much better way.
Mm.
And part of what they are able to do is not take things so personally.
Right.
They don't catastrophize things. They don't fear the worst. I mean, they're not naive either.
Right.
But, you know, when bad things are happening, they have the ability to be objective, to realize what they can do about it, accept what they can't do about it, and only concentrate on what they can do in that moment.
Right.
And a lot of people I know in sport and in business, they're under intense pressure, sometimes for very short periods of time, but they're brilliant at managing the stress and sticking with what they are capable of influencing in that moment. And, you know, one of the differences, I think, between resilient and non-resilient people is that a resilient person will have a really bad thing happen, a real problem that, you know, the stress of a situation, and they will ring fence it. They will just stick with that problem, whereas a non-resilient person seems to let all of that leak out into their entire life.
Mm.
So everything's bad when actually it's not. It's just this one thing, maybe in business or in family or whatever. But and then, of course, there's fallout. It affects everybody that they're with as well. So you can't really be cool if you're taking out all of your angst on everybody else around you.
Mm.
So this and when you're a resilient person, you can actually be much better supporter of other people who are perhaps not coping particularly well. I mean, my brother was military. I mean, and he's one of the guys that you'd really want to be with in a sticky situation. Mm-hmm. And he's quite judgmental in some ways. And, you know, he can't stand negative people. And I was chatting to him only the other day, actually. And I was saying, yeah, but Glenn, what you have to realize is that no matter what people do, everybody does the best they can. Mm. And I genuinely believe that. So if somebody is panicking or somebody is, you know, shouting at people or whatever, it's just that they're not coping particularly well with that situation.
Mm.
And I think as a cool person or as a resilient person, you realize that other people are doing the best they can.
Right.
And you become less judgmental. And it really does help you and it helps them. And the next day he messaged me on Facebook and he said, do you know, I was thinking about that. And I tried it this morning and it really worked. So if I can do that to my younger brother, then there's progress to be made. That's good.
There's hope in this world.
Exactly.
Now, in regards to the three types of emotions, what are they and how can we use them to affect our coolness?
All right. There are hundreds of emotions.
Mm.
I mean, a woman knows that. Men, we probably have only about four or five emotions that we understand particularly well. But our emotions will often govern our lives, but they don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And in very, very simple terms, no matter what the emotions are, they fall into one of three categories. There are positive emotions that make you feel better. There are negative emotions that will make you feel bad. And then there are neutral emotions. So whenever you have one emotion, it normally triggers other ones.
Mm.
And when you understand whether these are positive, negative, or neutral, again, it's a great way of being aware of what's going on in your head. So your thoughts will often trigger an emotion and the emotion will trigger a behavior. So they're all linked.
Mm.
So, of course, if your behaviors are not being helpful to you, if you trace it back, it's probably that you're allowing certain emotions to actually take over.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that it's cool to be well connected. Why? And how do you start forming these connections?
Right. Well, networking and building relationships is something I've spoken at conferences probably for 15 to 20 years. When you're well connected, doors open. In Asia, the entire culture is based on relationships.
Right.
So there's nothing new here. Funnily enough, I've been doing a talk in Penang, which is why I'm here in Malaysia, talking about this very thing. I think if you look at connections and relationships in terms of your career, perhaps, in a proactive way and in a strategic way, when people have heard good things about you, you walk in a room and they go, oh, yeah, I've heard about you, and that's a good thing. That is cool. But you then have some sort of magnetic effect on everyone around you. And when you have a reputation for being somebody who is well-known for whatever it is that your skill is, then that will contribute to this aura and a charisma that you will have. And that must happen with you, because you know, everybody knows who you are.
No, but are the Brits just a little bit more reserved, and that's why this is important?
I don't know. I think the idea behind making it a priority is more important than being reserved or whatever. But actually, cool guys are usually fairly introverted. They're the quiet ones. They observe. They know what's going on. They know who's got the power. They know who doesn't have the power, but they think they do. And they don't always say what they're thinking. They just know what's going on.
Right.
So when you're engaging and interacting with people, you know, you become much wiser. And just because you think it, you don't need to say it.
All right. So what would be the main takeaway people should have from How to Be a Cool Guy? Or what's the main takeaway from the book?
Well, I think when you understand the combination of all of the qualities, you can learn this. Anybody and everybody can be cool if they choose to. It's not about designer labels. It's about being a cool person within yourself and having a positive impact on other people. And I think whether you're young or old, old people would look back and go, yeah, I wish I'd have known that. But young people would think, right, I can use the skills that you'll find in this very short ebook. I mean, it's not a big read. It's like an hour and a half, something like that. They can apply those things to their life. And I think in a very short period of time, see that it will affect their lives positively. That's my belief anyway.
All right. Thanks for being with us.
Delighted.
I've been speaking to Roy Shepherd talking about his book, How to Be a Cool Guy. You've been listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.